Greetings. I am Shusada Kona Kumada. Welcome to Satsang. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening. Welcome to Satsang with Shusada. All our BBS listeners, it's a pleasure to be back with you tonight. We're going to go ahead and get started. So if you can just close your eyes, take a nice deep breath, and I will clear the space. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ and the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zakiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. And now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each one of us. And I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity, and I place myself in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions, and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Very good. All right. Welcome back. Energies are a little strange with this whole election thing coming our way. And if you're, you know, I had someone mention earlier at session, and it wasn't related to that, but just saying, like, what if you wake up and you just automatically feel kind of crabby? That could be happening to people right now. I wouldn't worry about it too much. It'll pass once this whole cycle runs its course. So just do your best to remember everything is just energy, and just to hold your center in the middle of whatever's moving, and not remember too what's the rules to living in the world, right? Remember the rules, and the last part is super important. But number one, right? No denial about what's going on. Number two, do what you can to be of service. And number three, don't attach to the outcome of that service. So keep that in mind with this whole election thing too, right? No attachment to the outcome. Ooh, that's not easy, is it? But it is what we're being challenged to do. So remember that. And remember to always stay humble and recognize that no matter what is moving and no matter what things appear to be, that no one ever has the full picture, and there are things out there that you can't possibly understand on all sides of what's happening. So remain humble above all else. which is also not easy to do. Okay, Megan, you said you had something you wanted to bring up on BBS tonight, so come on over. This is where I go, Megan Davis.
Okay. So, this is something that I'm kind of struggling with, partly because my excuse is I don't have time to look at it. But another is that I don't really know how to start. I know how to start, but there's something missing. Like, I feel like I'm missing something for me to get to the next step. But I'll start with the story. So the other day, over this past weekend, I had bought yogurt for work. And I was like, I'm going to have lunch for these days. And so the morning of such and such day, I remembered my yogurt and I brought it to work. And I was starving at lunchtime, and I went to grab the yogurt, and I went to open it, and I noticed there was a hole in it. And, of course, I was shell-shocked, and, you know, of course, that confusion came in. I was like, okay, well, when did it get this hole in it? Because, did I buy it this way? Did I do it, you know, in transporting it or something? Because if I did that, then I can still eat it. And then there was this whole story of, well, you know, I'm trying to see everything as God. So see the germs as God, even if it has germs, like this whole thing. And so I just started crying. Like, I mean, I was crying. I was so upset. So I had spoken to Tony about this because she just randomly called me and I was like, I was just crying over my yogurt. And so what she was saying to me is that there was that expectation there. And an attachment to me having this yogurt. And I said, well, I don't know when that expectation happened because it could have been anywhere along the way. And, you know, it didn't, like, nothing happened until I went to eat the yogurt and I saw the hole in it. And so I said, I don't even know when the expectation came in. And she said, the expectation came when you went to buy the yogurt. I was like, well, that was like 3 days ago. So, but anyway, so I was saying to her that it happens so fast that I'm at a place now where I don't really know how to slow it down. And so this is part of my excuse of just not having the time to slow it down enough to see, okay, when was that expectation or what was the expectation? When did I have that expectation? And seeing that I'm not in accord with what is. So if I was in accord of what is, when I saw the hole in the yogurt, it would have been, there's a hole in the yogurt,
right?
You know, as opposed to me crying. So to me, it's like, this is so trivial. I feel so stupid crying over yogurt, but this is happening like every day at this point. And so I know it's something that I have to look at, but at this point I'm so overwhelmed with all these expectations that it's like, I know I can just pick one of them probably and work on that. And it will help, you know, it'll kind of branch to everything else that's been transpiring the past few weeks. But I don't, like, I mentally understand what's going on. I perhaps have some experience with looking at expectations and attachments, but at this point, it's something that's so small that I can't get any further than that, if that makes sense. Perhaps not.
Okay. And I would have said the same exact thing to you, because it did. It started the moment that you looked at yogurt and went, oh, yogurt. And
that's
then
everything in life.
What's that?
That's everything in life.
It is and it isn't, right? So it can be in the moment, oh, yogurt, right? And but then there was a story that was created around yogurt. And it was yogurt at work, yogurt for lunch, And then the story walking into the break room or whatever was, I'm starving, which puts more weight on the expectation. And now I see my yogurt and, right. And then you have other stories that are built into the fact that there's a hole in the yogurt and what that could mean for you and for the body and all of it. And so it all just blows up in your face and all your, you know, beyond expectation, all your hopes even are just dashed in the moment, right? And it's crushing. So this is a beautiful thing to witness. And you said, like, you're seeing it over and over and all these little things, right? But that's the point. It is all the little things that create your sense of what's real for you and your sense of your life and how you fit in all of it and how all of it works for you. And it is the little things that really do add up to make the big difference. So it's the perfect thing to look at. Why do I care so much that there was a hole in the top of my yogurt, right? Because of course it brings up all of the stuff that's been recorded in our database of mind around bacteria growth and could there be salmonella in it or E. coli or like, oh my, you know, if there's ever a hole in something, throw it away immediately. Don't you dare eat it. And, you know, so all of that stuff gets triggered. And part of that for you is stronger for you than it would be for another person, right? So knowing that, it doesn't surprise me that it literally brought you to tears. I'm not surprised at all. Because then on top of the fact that I don't have my yogurt, now you're jumping forward and projecting out, oh my God, I'm going to be starving until dinner, but I don't have time to go get something else. And oh my gosh, what am I supposed to do? And all of this stuff just compiles on top of itself. And then you're completely overwhelmed. And yeah, so that makes perfect sense. It isn't true that you don't have time to look at it, right? Because you can truly just look at it in the moment. And that's the point. Now, it is a little harder when you're at the point of tears to back out enough to really look at it, but not impossible. And you are capable at this point in your journey of backing up and looking objectively, right? So part of it for you is just recognizing in the moment that the spiral is on full force, right? And just at least being aware of that, which I'm of course you would have been. I know you would have been. A lot of people wouldn't. But I'm sure for you, you were experiencing both simultaneously. Mm-hmm. So just kind of the, okay, like, let's back up. And why do I care so much? And to just come in from that place, just with that question, why do I care so much? Or why is this so important? Right. And then to go, okay, so it's important because I had expectation attached to it. There's attachment here. And to say, well, when did it start? And you can see it in that moment if you really just looked. I mean, as soon as you said it, it was crystal clear. Well, it was the moment you reached for yogurt at the supermarket, right? And because you had a plan, a future plan attached to it. And in it, you were the doer. You were the one who was going to make that happen, right? So, of course, you know, something out of your control happens. And there is, you know, whether you were the source of the hole in the lid or not, doesn't matter. Because it's something that happened out of your control. And now you're left feeling utterly powerless. And that's what it comes down to. Even though it seems like such a minor thing, right? And in the greater scheme of things, sure, it's a minor thing. But remember, every time you experience any kind of downward spiral, the story is the same. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, a downward spiral because my dog just got hit or I have a hole in my yogurt, right? It's one seems like a huge story and the other one seems very minor, but it's the same story. And that's the point. So it's a beautiful gift in the sense that rather than kind of hanging out and waiting for the big moment to happen, you know, the big story, you're being shown over and over and over again over the last couple of weeks, how all these little stories, like there it is, and there it is, and there it is, and there it is. And that's really powerful to see. Yeah, really powerful. So I guess the greater question there is, now what do you do with it?
So you
answer. Well, I was going to say that that's what I feel is that missing piece for me to take the next step. I'm missing something. And I feel as though I can't see clearly because at this point I'm so overwhelmed with the little things that it's making things more muddled for me. Does that make sense?
Sure. That's exactly what the mind would do with that. The mind creates the story that it's overwhelmed and all of it. And what if it was just as simple as surrendering to what is?
No! I knew that, but I didn't know it. That's really difficult because, and this is what I was trying to tell Atona, because that's every moment to me. That's every moment. Mm. And perhaps this is the next step of greater spiritual understandings, but then perhaps part of me saying I don't have enough time is that it seems like a tedious process.
No. Mm-mm. No. No, why would the mind say I don't have enough time? It's too tedious. I don't have the time to really get under it, really see it. Bridge that space that seems murky. Those are all justifiers, right? Why? You tell me.
To not have to work on it.
Why?
Avoid it.
Yeah, why?
I know this one. Why? Let's see. Mind has its own agenda. Let's see. Mind. I know it. To keep the story running?
Okay. But what's the story?
It's the doer.
Yes. Beautiful. That's beautiful. 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 Okay. So, If what I'm saying to you is just to move into the space of surrendering to what is, right? Pure allowance. The mind comes in from the space of, hell no, I won't. I'm the doer. I'm in control. I say what happens and what doesn't happen. And I'm the one who's going to fix it when it gets messed up. And right. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I say to you, no, you gotta release it. Surrender to it. The mind goes, no. I'm too busy. I'm way too busy to look at that. Because literally, even though you'd already talked to someone about it, a qualified someone about it, and you sat and looked, when you sat here with me, how long did it take us to get through that? 2 minutes? Okay, yeah, you had enough time. I don't think it was a time thing, right? But that's exactly it. And you're accurate. You said it's everything. It's everything. Like it comprises my whole life, this stuff over and over and over and over again. I said, yeah, it does. Right. So what are we left with when we see that?
Besides surrender?
Yeah. I mean, like what state does the mind go into when you recognize it is? It's all of it. And there's one way out, right? Mm-hmm. And then what is the mind experience in the moment?
Feels like panic.
Sure.
A loss of control. Because it seems so simple. But at the same time, there's resistance. And every time something happens that I see it. I see it's an expectation that, I had an attachment to the outcome. And yet and still, I struggle with it. So I guess the struggle part is the fact that I'm resisting to what I know I have to do, which is to just allow.
Right. So it all goes back to like one of my favorite Buddha stories. Yeah. It goes back to the cup is already broken, except in this case, the yogurt is already punctured. Right. So, but it's the same thing. It's the same thing. So whether what it requires is the allowance of whatever is going to move is going to move with me or without me, with my permission or without my permission, and to be able to just move with it as it happens. Now, maybe it means that, you know, hole in yogurt, eat yogurt anyway, smell it first, right? Or whatever. Or maybe it means hole in yogurt, look at watch, decide I can make it till dinner. Or maybe it means hole in yogurt, look at watch, jump in car, go pick something up and be late for the next class, right? And maybe it means that. So whatever has to, whatever makes the most sense in the moment, you know, if you're starving and you literally don't know energetically if you're going to make it through your next class, maybe it's worth being 5 minutes late to go pick something up real quick to tide you over, right? And that's fine. But the reason you can't do it is because all of the stories that now are circling around all of those different choices and all of those stories you're attached to. So I know you, right? And as a teacher, you're not going to be late for your own class. No. So you've got to battle that. And that's going to create suffering for you. You see it?
Yeah.
Right. And no, and then, oh, I'm going to eat it anyway. It smells okay. I took a real little taste first. It seemed okay. So I'm going to do it. But even after you eat it, you're going to sit with it and you're going to be worried for the next 24 hours that you're going to have food poisoning, yeah, right? You would be. Exactly. Exactly. So whatever story it is that's going to sit there after where your choices are going to be made from is still a point of suffering for you, but it doesn't need to be. So the whole thing is that in that moment to just allow what is, you know, you just have to be objective. That's all it requires is objectivity. You know, okay. Can you say, well, that really stinks that there's a hole in my yogurt? Sure. Absolutely. That doesn't, you know, you're not wrong for doing that. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just what you do with it after, you know, it doesn't have to become the thing that ruins your day. Right. Yeah.
So can I ask then in that moment, if it happens again,
when it happens again,
so hole in yogurt, I look at it. I witness the story starting to run again. It's a matter of stopping the story dead in its track, seeing it for what it is, looking at the expectation of it, maybe where it started, and the attachment to the outcome. So basically just seeing it for what it is and then moving from there.
Yeah, right. So you see it for what it is, you take it to the highest light, right? You take it to the greatest level of awareness you've got, and then you hold it from there and let it go, right? And that's all you need to do. So remember, too, though, that you have an attachment to eating. You have an attachment to, I don't like the feeling in my body when I'm hungry. Right. Mm-hmm. But that's all mind. It's still all mind because you're not the body. Mm-hmm. Now, what was it? Byron Katie went, I think she said what was like 31, 32 days. She didn't eat or drink anything because she wanted to test her theory. Right. Which was, I don't believe anything the mind says. And she did it and didn't lose an ounce of weight. Right. She went full on breatharian. Just to say, kind of, does it work? Is this as accurate as it appears to be for me? And it is. But that shows you in her experience, it's beautiful that she shared that with everybody because you can see it from a different level, right? She's not like a yogi out in India or something. She's this kind of normal woman. And the beauty is that it just shows so clearly you are not the body, but look at how attached we are to the body itself, right? So when the body starts saying it needs fuel, the identification is so strong that we're running around going, oh, how can I feel it? How can I feel it? Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm not saying that you don't fuel the body, right? I have to be careful on the radio because people will be like, she's telling me I don't have to eat anymore. That's not what I'm saying. But we have to be very aware that this is part of what creates the reality that you're living in, where you really do believe you're the body and the personality and all of it. And where you believe the laws of physics, even here, that everyone would argue and say, but it's true, right? Well, there are too many cases of people out there who have defied the laws of physics for us to say that it's 100% accurate. And it really comes down to the, you know, the beliefs that you carry. So it's very easy to believe in gravity. It's very easy to believe you're hungry, right?
So in that moment, when that with that expectation and me seeing the hole in the yogurt, I see now how there's a whole belief structure surrounding me eating the yogurt.
Right.
And if I don't eat the yogurt, I'm going to starve to death. Because that's what it felt like. Because I was so hungry.
Yeah. Yeah. And the because of the attachment to that belief, you probably felt even hungrier than you actually were. You see, it would have kind of compounded it, because the more emotion you've got tied into something, the greater the reality of it becomes for you.
I can see that, because the funny thing is that once I finally let it go and I was just doing my work, I wasn't as hungry. I really wasn't hungry. And then I went to reach in my bag for something and I pulled out a Juice Plus bar. I was like, yay, I'm not gonna starve. I have something to eat. So, okay, yeah. I understand that.
Right. And interesting, too, that the story changes again, because now you're really not that hungry until you see food again. It's like, oh, yippee, I'm hungry again all of a sudden. But really, that's all it comes down to. And it is so simple. You know, the way to live in the world really is so simple, but it's deceptively simple. And you don't see it until you've really walked through it and picked it apart and truly seen what's playing. And then hopefully after that, you don't get fooled by it again. Yeah. But that's it. And you are absolutely accurate. It's the expectation that sits there in like just about every moment of your existence. Everything that you're doing, you have expectations attached to. Right. And that's why, you know, to be in the world and out of the world means that you're very fluid in the world. Because if you're not of the world, you're not attached to time and space. You're not attached to any of the stories, any of the concepts, period. So whatever is moving in the world, you're just kind of moving with it. And that's very, you know, difficult for humans to wrap themselves around. Well, what do you mean? I have a job. I have to be there at such and such a time, and I get to clock out then, and I, you know, I get 10 minutes for this, and you know. But that's why you tend not to see people from really exalted states of consciousness, you know, working in factories and stuff. Like, not that they couldn't, but it's the whole, you know, you kind of just move from a different place. So take that to, you know, I'm all about taking everything and making it practical in your world, right? So take it to a practical level. Yes, you do have a job, right? But within the structure of that job, which you do need to pay attention to because you want to keep your job, and that's fine. So within that, though, now you allow for more fluidity, but still holding the parameters in place. And so this is a good example. So your lunchtime, and what does that mean? You know, well, maybe some days it means I don't eat at all. Maybe some days it means I actually go out and, you know, leave a note for the kids in case I'm 5 minutes late, you know, or whatever it means. So that you allow for yourself to be moved in the moment the way it needs to happen. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
That's a great story. You know, and the reason I love it so much is that we have a lot of people who will listen who, you know, they don't carry the understandings yet because they haven't had someone really teaching them the the way I would teach deeper understandings. And so you take this little story that is so simple within the construct of just what happened, and it's to use that as a teaching tool is actually very powerful, I think. It's good. You have something, Mary? Do you? You're looking at me like you do. Yeah, get in the hot seat. Oh no, I'm gonna put her on the radio.
You just have to speak into it.
Okay, so looking at expectations and, you know, everything that you were just talking about, and then in relation to thinking in relation to taking care of specifically, let's say, a child, so many people, whether parenting, you know, whatever it may be, or in some caregiving role, you can also be doing this with another pair, but specifically, let's say, with the child, where you're in a, you know, a teaching role, you know, in terms of, you know, guiding them and being an example and everything that parenting and caregiving, you know, comes along with. And, you know, and so there's all that. And then there's also, you know, very much our ego and our control that flares up and wants to, you know, has expectations and all of that. So I'm looking at, you know, trying to sort that through, you know, because I'm like, well, where, you know, there's situations that come up in, you know, my life right now is, you know, in a caregiving role that I'm in. And, you know, there's certain things that I would, that I feel like, okay, I would like to be able to teach this, or this is an expectation that I have. But then I also feel like, okay, this is really also my ego feeling brushed up against and wanting to butt its head and be like, I'm going to win this one. But how do you do that when with a child who's, you know, also very much having an ego flare up and wanting to take control. And okay. So if you could speak to that whole fun situation.
I can try. Having three of my own, I can, I know where you're sitting. I will say from the level of life experience, right? When you're, even though your ego has been triggered in whatever's happening with the child, and there's something that can be shown to the child, like you do carry a level of authority there just because of your life experience. What happens too often is the parent or whomever is the caregiver utilizes that authority as something to dominate with. And that's not what we want to be doing. Just because then it gets imprinted on the child. And that's, of course, what happens over and over and over again. But as someone who's attempting to be more conscious in the world, then that's something you want to definitely be aware of. Now, it does not mean you become a doormat to the kid and let the kid, because children are children, you know, between the ages of 5 and 7, that ego is firmly imprinted. And then those, you know, what I always call the little me monsters, they start running amok and they will utilize everything in their power to manipulate you. That's just what the ego does, period. And with children, they learn pretty quickly how to manipulate adults. They really do. And it's not that they're being, you know, it's not that they're hateful or evil little creatures or anything like that. They just learn what works. So, so in the situation, you've got a kid who's the ego is doing battle with you. You have to, the biggest thing is to stay centered. So if you can recognize that it has triggered you, then you do need to take that second, take that deep breath. And like I was just saying to Meg, to, you know, take it to the highest light. And when you can recognize, okay, I got a story here and it's been triggered, now you've got to recognize what is right action in this moment. Obviously, it's not to react from the space of your patterning, but to come in from an objective place where you can look at the big picture, see what's running on the side of the kid, and be able to be objective about where in there is that valid? Yeah. Where is that valid? And approach him from that space where you're not making him completely wrong, but you're not necessarily telling him what he's doing is okay either. Right. The thing with kids is a lot of times they do, and, you know, especially younger kids now, because they're I think overall they're a bit brighter, you know, than a couple generations ago or whatever. And they have a capacity. And I always felt this about my own kids, that from very early on, I was always, you know, I was not always, but mostly very stable with them. But I would talk to them and I didn't treat them like little children who couldn't understand me. I understood now part of this is because I was trained as a teacher and as an elementary school teacher too. So I had a lot of psychological stuff with kids, but I would come down to their level just enough so I knew they could understand me. I didn't use huge words that they wouldn't get. I'd come down and speak it the way when it makes sense to them. But I gave them the benefit of the doubt that they could actually process what I was saying to them, right? And so what I always did with my kids was a lot of, we talked through stuff together rather than me just kind of laying down the law, which I did when it was necessary. But most of the time it was more like, hey, let's take a look at this because I'm not really cool with you doing it the way that you're wanting to do it right now, but I'm not saying we can't do anything. So let's just look at this together. And I always found that was really beneficial for the kids because when they feel like they have a voice, they function so much better, you know, and that's part of just the whole issue with the ego in general. The ego ultimately feels like it has no voice. So if we can foster that in kids coming up, where they don't feel like they've been cut off, like so many of us were cut off as kids, like we didn't get a say so, you know. I did, and I was probably one of the few who was talked to, but it really does help, and it'll help. You won't see it as much maybe today, but remember, they remember everything that's going on. So if it's an ongoing thing, they start to trust that you're not necessarily going, maybe their experiences, they're used to a caregiver or parent who really just, they don't have a voice with, and now you're someone who comes in with a voice. Well, they may not handle it very well at first, but over time they start to, they know they can trust, okay, she's not going to wig out on me. Like maybe we can talk through this. And then that actually teaches them that they can be more stable and that they can be vocal without having to be over the top vocal. Yeah. And it all does, it has a very cumulative effect, I think, with kids. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you really speak to a situation that happens all the time, you know, in terms of, or it can potentially mm-hmm. happen all the time in terms of, you know, the kid seeing the situation one way or doing one action that, you know, that they think is right or based on, you know, whatever their perspective is at that time. Right. And, you know, and then, for me, in my case, you know, I'll tend to think that there's a different perspective that's valid at that time or that's better at that time. And so then I'm like, oh, am I just saying this? Or it's one thing to say it like, okay, I really do think that this is more valid. But then I'm kind of starting to look at, well, okay, like you said, their point isn't 100% not valid. So then how much do I push my point? And, you know, when do I stick with it and when do I not? And, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's where your discernment comes in. And, you know, with kids, as with anybody. So this is not just a child thing. This is you having interpersonal relationships in the world. And this is important. It's so beneficial to you if you can put yourself in another person's shoes. Right. And that's the beauty of learning and walking in the world from a more objective place consistently, is that you when you are not so identified with what's happening and you can detach from your own personal stories, it makes you capable of literally putting yourself in the other person's space so you can see through their lens, right? Now, people would say, like, I don't know how you do that. It's actually very simple to do, but you can't do it from the space of being attached to your own stuff. You got to be able to detach. But then you can get in there. Now, from the space of a child, that's really helpful because you could have a kid that, okay, so they got a new paint set, right? And ooh, how fun. And so you leave the room for 10 minutes and you come back and Johnny's taking the paints and painting all over the kitchen counter with them. How fun. What a big canvas, right? And you're like, ah. And of course, he doesn't understand what the problem is, this, you know, 5-year-old kid. And now, so you can stop it, and without you just flying off the handle. You got to pull back and go, okay, now be a 5-year-old for a second. Well, of course that's fun. And does he understand? And then you can just say, you know, hey, bud, let me just, can I talk to you for a second? I need you to understand this. So this is super fun for you. And I totally get that. But can you understand too, that if you continue to do it, it's that now I'm, and so for me, like mommy's going to have to take the time to clean it, and it's messy, and it's going to be a big cleaning thing. And there's probably a better way, if you want to play with paints, that we could do this so that it would be easy for both of us. And then a child can, they can rationalize through that because they have the concept in place of work for mom. For most of them, they know that doesn't make mom terribly happy when she's picking up messes and stuff. And they remember that, and they can make that connection. And then they're also looking at it going, well, she's not flat out kind of saying no and taking my paints away. She's saying, she's just redirecting. Yeah. Oh, I've got a big roll of craft paper in the other room. Let's do that. Or, hey, you know what? Let's go do it on the driveway. Right. So, or whatever it is, something where it's not a big deal. And part of that too, is remembering that for an adult, so much in your world is such a big damn deal, right? That is really unnecessary. Really unnecessary. We get so hung up on how perfect everything is supposed to be. And that's because the ego, remember, is trying desperately to create of its own accord this sense of heaven for itself that it feels like it'll never return to, you know, through the grace of God. So it has to create it here. So we're like really focused on making my space as perfect as possible. And, you know, look how many people like put scads of money into maintaining their lawns and their this and that. So everything looks just perfect. And The clothing has to be perfect. And my haircut has to be perfect. And, you know, because, you know, it's a losing battle. There is no winning that battle in this world where everything takes constant work, constant upkeep, constant maintenance, right? Or it all falls apart and goes to hell, right? That's the world. So the child doesn't have that, right? They're just in the moment. So as an adult, it's not about you being the polar opposite of the child where you can't be in the moment. It's about you learning to navigate both, right? So you're still instilling values in the child. You're still instilling a sense of, you know, what is kind of okay in a moment, and where is it where we're kind of pushing too far to learn some boundaries, but not from the space of don't do that, right? And just completely shutting them down. It's just not healthy for the child to be given it that way. Now, there are moments that, you know, if they're, you know, walking, there's a snarling dog on the loose and they're walking up to it with its finger stuck out. Yeah, I'd yell, don't do that. Absolutely. So again, you know, you have to, everything I say, it's all malleable, right? And it's all based in the moment. That's why discernment is so important, because you have to, like I've said this to different people before, when it comes to a battle of wits or whatever between a child and an adult, you know, you have to look at the adult and go, you know, you need to be the bigger person here. You're the adult and you need to be the bigger person. That means that you are the one who has to learn to work with the younger one. You can't put that expectation on the child because they're not capable, right? But when you come down in from the wisdom that you carry, and then the capacity for compassion and understanding, now you can make it work with a child. Or I've said the same thing between, you know, my teenage son and one of his younger sisters, where a battle ensued. And I had to just look at him and go, dude, you know, you're 16 and you need to be the bigger person here, right? I'm not saying that what she did was right, right? And I'm not saying that everything you did was wrong. But what I'm saying is, of the two of you, you're more capable of being able to back up when you saw that it was getting out of control. And so you need to be able to do that for yourself. So the same is true of adults. Yeah, you are an adult, right? So by virtue of your physical age, you've got to start putting the ownership on yourself that you're going to, you know, live up to that age and keep yourself in check. And it's hard with children. It's really, really hard with children because, man, can they push your buttons more than anything in my experience. And I've had a lot of experience with people and kids, my own kids can push my buttons more than anyone in my life ever has. Yeah. And that's why they're such great teachers, because they're always there to show you where anything could be stuck, you know, and where it still feels personal. Yeah. Yeah. Anything else?
I mean, for me, I have, you know, a couple specific situations that I'm kind of grappling with and trying to figure out, you know, if that boundary, you know, was appropriate or if it was more pride and ego and just being like, so probably I'm getting the sense right now that if that question is even coming up, it was probably pride. Like, I mean, I could feel that it was definitely that there was that ego in there, you know, in me at the time and like, you know, being triggered with a couple of situations I'm thinking of. But I was also trying to just like uphold, you know, boundaries that were already discussed and that lessons that I'm working on. So I was like, well, you know, there's one thing about, okay, how my feelings are, but at the same time, okay, I felt like, you know, I was justifying it or feeling justified, like, well, this is also what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, you know, I'm supposed to be, you know, maintaining some order here and
sure.
So
yeah, no, and that's excellent. So the beauty that you have here, and this is where a lot of people who have to care for children get tripped up. There's this concept that sits there with us as adults, especially if we, you know, I'd say, you know, as you become a parent, but even if you end up caring for other people's kids or you're an aunt and you spend time with your kids and they come and, or your sister's kids and they come and, you know, stay the weekend with you or whatever, but it all applies. And you have the ability, and people rarely do this as the caregiver, but you have such a beautiful ability to make your mistakes and then to make that known to the children, right? So, yeah, you have a moment where what you did, you can look back on it after and you can go, wow, like that really was more my own pride running than it was, you know, and I'm justifying it because of the boundaries that we set in place. Wonderful, right? So now take it to the child, make it right with the child, because where was he left? He was left feeling like, you know, what he did was just totally wrong and whatever happened. And now you can say, you know, hey, Johnny, can I talk to you? And I've really been looking at what happened between us earlier today, and I want to tell you something that I saw. And let him listen to you, apologize to him about where you saw that you went wrong, and show him that, you know, this is where it came from. And I really, there were issues that we have with these boundaries that we've talked about, and it is important. We need them. But I think I'm seeing now that the way I went about it was harsher than I would have liked it to have been. And I wasn't able to control myself in the moment. And I'm sorry for that. And wow, what a gift for a child, right? Because what a child gets all the time is that whatever the parent says is the way it is. And they never apologize when they overreact and do something nasty. So the kid is just left with, it obviously was my fault and I'm worthless. And that's where the child sits. So that's what they carry into adulthood with them, right? And then because they were on that side of it, now as an adult, when they have their own kids, they become the parent who just kind of lashes out at the kids and never apologizes. But you have an amazing opportunity with children to show them where you're wrong. When you can admit it, wow, here's an adult who actually admits when they've messed up and asks me if I'll forgive them for hurting them. You know, I remember times with my son, especially because he was my big trigger, where, you know, I lashed out at him. I was so angry and I raised my voice, which is really not common for me. And I literally couldn't believe how harsh I was with him, this beautiful, sweet little boy, you know. And then I remember going into his room and I just took him on my lap and I hugged him. I said, I am so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I never should have done it. I'm just crying, you know. And there are a lot of parents, they would not be capable of doing that because heaven forbid that I should show someone my weakness. And it's not weakness. It's actually your strength. You're showing them your strength that I can admit when I'm wrong. Yeah. I don't have to be afraid to be wrong. And I don't have to be afraid to tell another person that I messed up. What a gift for a child. Because that's what a child learns. Don't ever tell anyone you messed up, right? Come up with all the justifiers in the world for why you did it. You know, anything that happens, put but after your apology and follow it with something so the apology really doesn't mean anything. That's what they learn. And so all of you listening, you know, this is true if it's your husband or your wife or your parent or, you know, your best friend, your boss, whatever it is, it's the same exact thing. Learn to be humble enough to recognize when, you know, when you have not approached things in a way befitting of you, truly. And then come clean with it, with the other person. You know, it's such a gift, truly such a gift. And look what you're doing for the world. You're showing the world wherever your reach is, whatever it is, you're showing that, wow, there is another way. We can actually be vulnerable with each other. Right? We can, you know, and so in the moment you're doing that with the child and you are vulnerable and maybe the child now is just really angry and they want to lash out at you. That's okay. Right? And you can be like, I totally understand. If I were you, I'd be really angry with me too right now. I am so sorry. You know, and wow, you just gave him permission to be angry. Yeah. And it's not threatening. It's a beautiful thing. Really beautiful thing. Yeah. That's a good, I'm glad you brought that up tonight because, and I hope people's kind of stayed with me, even though it seemed to be about kids, because it really is, it's about everything. You know, you have a relationship with your girlfriend and things get out of hand and the two of you are yelling at each other. And to be able to just back up after it all happens and see where, you know, where you were wrong in the whole thing and own it and bring it back to the person. Not from the space of now you have to tell me where you were wrong, but this is what I see about where I was wrong. And I want to make that right. Yeah. And that's all you need to do. You know, they still have stuff. They may not be capable of doing the same and that's okay. But remember all you can control is you and your choices in the moment and then walk out whatever that moment is. And then you're responsible for what happens after that moment. Yeah. So again, you take it all to the highest understanding you got. And even though it'll be tough, because it is, you know, when you're going to apologize to someone for something, it's not easy. It's not easy. So you just stick with it. And yeah, it's all good. Yeah, you're welcome. Uh-oh, PLN, what are you doing, honey? I hope we're still on the air right now. Aliens over there playing with my computer. Yeah, we are. Okay. Good. Okay. So lots to think about after that whole discussion. Going into this next, you know, what is today? Thursday. So next Tuesday is the big day, right? So here in the States, just keep your cool. And oh, this whole election cycle is just kind of crazy. But beautiful too. So it's, you know, I mean, I think that I don't know that there are many people out there in the whole country who are happy with either candidate, truly. And that's a good thing because it needs to, we've been watching this for several cycles where the whole system really does need to be kind of shaken up real good. And you know, I can't be political. I'm not allowed. So it's good that it's all coming up now and we can really take a look at who are the kinds of people that we really do want kind of in charge of our whole country, you know. And remember that they are an outpicturing of you as well, right? So the things you hate most about them, look for that in yourself and where you're in denial about that you maybe could be guilty of the same thing. And your only responsibility is to kind of be the best you that you can be and be humble enough to know when you've been wrong and do what you can to make it right. With no attachment to the outcome. Right, Megan? That's right. Very good. PLN, how are we doing? We time? Okay. Got a great meditation song for you tonight. Please sit through it. Let's transmute this energy that did come up that can be cleared now. And we'll be back with you next Thursday for Satsang. Thanks so much for joining us. My love to you. Good night.
Tvamiv mata chapita tvamiv bandushta sakha tvamiv.
You are beginningless. You are divine.